Okay, so this is joint work with Ben Kraskopf. We're both at Bristol, and we have been trying to compute two-dimensional stable and unstable manifolds of diffeomorphisms or vector fields for a very long time, I guess. And I may be a little bit repetitive, but I think the pictures that I'm showing are new. You haven't seen them before. My talk is about computation and visualization of two-dimensional manifolds. Computation, because for part of the talk I will explain how I compute these things. And visualization, because I guess in a sense, once you've computed the manifold, you really want to do something with it. You want to get an impression of what it looks like, and you want to extract information about your dynamical system from it or something like that. And visualization in that sense becomes very important. At least that's our idea. And I guess the ultimate is the picture you see up here. It's this, it's a poster, and it was on display in the London Underground in the month of March of the year 2000 as part of the celebrations of the World Mathematics Year. And so Bernd and I are very proud that we got to have a poster designed with our manifolds on it. It was designed by Andy Burbanks. And so I guess these pictures, that's our stuff, and the really artsy look of it all and the clouds and whatnot, that's Andy Burbank. So he's the artist here. But maybe, So anyway, so let me begin by trying to explain a little bit very quickly and what this this algorithm is all about. So I'm talking ODEs today. I have a vector field. And let me assume that we have an equilibrium and it has a two-dimensional unstable manifold. So I don't know whether I have to remind you of what an unstable manifold is defined as. So if I have an equilibrium point, let's call it P, then the unstable manifold consists of points Q. If I take the flow of Q, starting at zero and varying time, by going backward in time, then in the limit, I end up at P. That's the unstable manifold. Now, for a one-dimensional unstable manifold, then you can say that's really an orbit. The problem with computing two-dimensional or higher-dimensional manifolds is that you're now having an infinite number of orbits, and you want to try build a surface out of that. So typically, when you try to compute these things, you really think about growing the manifold starting from a very small piece and then make the manifold bigger. And so that's drawn here. So I have a two-dimensional unstable manifold, which means I have a two-dimensional eigenspace associated with unstable eigenvalues. And I start with a very small circle around my equilibrium point. And that circle, as an approximation to the true manifold, I let it be in this eigenspace. Now I want to grow the manifold bigger. Now, there are two things you could do, or at least intuitively. The very first idea is like, well, I just take a couple of mesh points on the circle, and I start growing these orbits. And I just flow the manifold, flow these points under the vector field, and I get a collection of curves that form, hopefully, a two-dimensional surface. Now, what you're doing here is really letting the dynamics of your vector field decide on how you represent your manifold. And that is something that we found is a bad idea to create a nice mesh on your manifold. So you want a nice mesh. So then we had this idea, and rather than letting the dynamics decide, we're just going to impose another idea of what a nice way of growing is. And our idea is what we call... Well, I don't know. I guess we haven't really decided on a good name or how to call it. But we want to grow geodesic level sets of this manifold. And so let me try explain that based on this picture here. If I have an equilibrium and two eigenvalues, and suppose they're both real, and then typically they're both different, and one is therefore stronger than the other, then I have a really strong expansion, say, horizontally, and a pretty, well, weak expansion vertically. If I would take my small circle, take my mesh points, and I would start flowing, what happens is that my orbits tend to sort of align in the very strong direction. Now, these points on this first circle lie at a small distance, say delta, from my equilibrium point. Now, what I'd like to do as a first step to grow in this geodesic level set is pick up a next circle of points that, again, all of them lie at the same distance from my equilibrium point. And this picture, you could really think Euclidean distance. What I mean is an approximation of the geodesic distance along the manifold later on. So here I sort of think this circle there that's like radially the collection of points that lie the same distance from the equilibrium. And I want to pick up, well, what I could pick up is these points where the orbits intersect that circle. Now, again, what is wrong about this, or wrong, what is a bit worrisome, is that your orbits are going to align in this strong expanding direction, and you've got a gap here. And you've no clue how big that gap is. Locally you can say, oh, that's the ratio of the eigenvalues. But once I grow bigger and further away, I don't know how big that gap is. Nonlinear affects anything. And so if I would sort of pick up these points and then say I do some interpolation, I'm going to be in trouble. Because I'm doing an interpolation between these two points here to fill up this bit, and I make a big error, and I have no control about how big that error is. And so what we were trying to do is say, rather than take a uniform distribution on the circle that you start off with, flow the orbits, pick up the points that lie at the next level set that you want to pick up in your data set. And then afterwards, doing an interpolation, we want to really mess about with these points here, the ones you start off with. Do an interpolation here where you have control about the mesh size because you just preset it where you want it to be. And then you do an interpolation here, and you make sure that the orbits end up at such a position that your intersection points are now uniformly distributed. Okay. So here's the idea. Maybe I should start using two overheads. That's what I was planning anyway. Okay. So what you see here, this picture, this red stuff, that's a bit of the manifold I've already computed. And this outer boundary, if you want, is the last topological circle that I got. Here is one mesh point. Now I want to grow radially outward, equal distance. And so the direction that I would like to grow from this mesh point is like perpendicular to the boundary. That's this plane. I erect a plane that's, well, more or less an it's always an approximation, but it's perpendicular to this boundary. In this picture, think two-dimensional manifold in 3D space. Why not? So if I now consider just a small neighborhood of my mesh point, then my manifold as a two-dimensional manifold will intersect this plane in a one-dimensional curve. Locally, that's always true. So my next level set, suppose I want to grow the level set that lies capital delta further from the boundary that I have so far, well, there's going to be exactly one point that satisfies this. All I need to do is find this point, B of R. So that's like what you see over there, except that I don't want to grow, like follow this orbit. I have specified the direction in which I want to find this intersection point. So now you're assuming, you're using the fact that you have an overflowing manifold. This is an unstable manifold. And so I have a whole bunch of orbits that start on the boundary and flow out. They go into a region that I haven't computed yet. And particularly, some of these will intersect my plane. And in doing so, they will lie on this curve of intersection that, of course, I don't know, but I now see a clear parametrization of these orbits starting on the boundary of what the piece I've already computed, and then parametrizing with their intersection point this intersection curve. And, well, of course, I can have a starting point and I get a first intersection, and then later on I can get a second intersection. So to really make this parametrization be correct, I need to take both starting point and integration time into account. Now, there's exactly one of these that will do the trick. So there's exactly one point, Q of R, that's on the boundary with an associated integration time, say tau, that if I follow the orbit for integration time tau, I end up at B of R. That's all I need to do. And to find this point, I set up a boundary value problem. Because I know exactly what I want. Let me take this one out. I want to find that orbit. I know where it starts. I know where it's supposed to end. And so that's set here. I start on the current boundary, which is a topological circle. And I want to end in this plane. The only thing I don't know is my integration time. And that is my idea of doing continuation. I start with integration time zero. That's nice. I know the answer. Namely, if I start at this mesh point, I'm on the boundary. I integrate zero time, so I'm still at the mesh point. It lies in that plane. Perfect. Only problem is it does not lie at capital distance delta from my mesh point. The distance is, in fact, zero. So that's my starting point. Now I start increasing my tau. I just increase tau, find the solution of my boundary value problem. Given that integration time, I will find a new point, B of R, and I just monitor this distance until I hit delta, and I'm done. So that's the whole algorithm. So let me show an example of this. The example has a lot to do with this, with the poster that I showed in the very beginning. It is the Lorentz system, but I have I've fiddled with the parameters. This beta here is normally 8 over 3. In the poster, it's 8 over 3. Here, it's only 0.4. What happens is there's no strange attractor here. There's only a periodic orbit that is attracting. And so here you see a picture of what these manifolds look like. Now, in this case, the manifold of the origin is sitting here, is a stable manifold that's two-dimensional. Well, fine. I just go negative in time and I find a stable manifold. That's trivial to change that. And so these pictures here, what you see is how this big manifold slowly has grown, right? First, it's virtually flat, this bit here, and it starts this curl, the helical shape around the z-axis. And so you get an extra curl and you get an extra curl and the whole thing looks like this. Now, I guess what I really want to stress here is that this manifold is built up by geodesic level sets. Every time, I don't know, it's a bit unclear that you see the color changes, that every time a color changes, I've picked up a new level set where the geodesic distance to the equilibrium, which is the origin in this case, is the same for every point, approximately. Now, this means that I really need that every level set, which is sort of shown here as a band where the bottom bit is one circle and the top bit is another circle. These bands should be closed curves, topological circles. And so this picture sort of shows an idea of what that looks like. Initially, we really start with circles. It's almost flat. Then as we have this helical shape, you sort of see how this thing starts to wrap itself up. It's really like a ribbon. It's a closed ribbon. It never intersects itself. It is always nice. It's always a topological circle. Even this complicated one. This is the very last one, I believe. Yeah, I think so. It's the last one. And this thing looks very complicated, but it's a ribbon topological circle. So then, I don't know. We've been computing this for years, trying several examples and whatnot, and it always worked like this. And all of a sudden, we thought, like, but wait. This could go wrong. You could have that these topological circles start to sort of touch, and you get singularities in your manifold. Yeah. So let me let me try explain this again. I'm computing the manifold with geodesic level sets. I'm not trying to take the dynamics into account. Therefore, I can create singularities, whereas normally you would say, oh, but then that's an equilibrium point. I may not pick that up with this algorithm because I forget about the dynamics. Now, we never seen an example where it goes wrong. So it doesn't mean that it don't exist. And so we decided to cook one. Now, I don't know whether you ever tried to cook an example where you get a stable or unstable manifold out that does what you want it to do. It was quite something. So here is my example. And I don't know. This is the mathematics behind it. But what do you need to think of? I want an unstable manifold that has a singularity in terms of geodesic level sets. So what did we do? We take the origin as the equilibrium. You take your unstable manifold really as a hyperbola. And so it's like this cup shape. Now, that's the first bit. Then we throw this transformation over it. What happens is that this thing gets sort of pushed on the side, and at the same time, we have some banging up there that you get, you're growing a little hill. And so the more you bang, the more obtruse this hill is. That's this A parameter here. So I'm going to show you two pictures. One for A is 5. I haven't banged that much. And one for A equal 10. And so this is A equal 5. That's A equal 10. And this green thing here, that's an orbit on there. We gave you the spiraling coordinates. So this is an orbit. That's the, well, almost the same orbit. Here I've banged, right? There's this thing coming up. And so the orbit sort of gives you an idea what the manifold is supposed to look like. And here you see that nicely the algorithm just computes the manifold. It's not that bad yet. Here you see the mesh that is generated by this algorithm. Now here things go wrong. As you grow your geodesic level set, they're nice circles in the beginning, but as you come closer to where this sort of hump is grown, you get that the two level sets start to touch. Now, since this is a global thing, it's not like in a very tiny neighborhood we start touching and then this sort of a zipper closes up. That's really what's happening here a little bit, and then the algorithm can still take care of that. But here, this is a global touch. I really have a big detour here before I start to intersect, and the algorithm doesn't notice that. So what it does notice is that it can't find the next level set because I lose the fact that I have an overflowing manifold. So the algorithm actually stops here. But this kind of singularity, it does not pick up. So I don't know. I guess I want to talk to Mike about this because he picks it up, and I don't know how he does that. So here is something that it goes wrong, but again, we haven't seen it in practice. We cooked this example up. And I do think you can do something about it also, in that there's no reason why you couldn't have the algorithm split up the topological circles into two circles and then grow the whole thing happily ever after. But you need to detect it. That's still something that doesn't quite work yet. Now, I want to finish off with showing some more details on visualization. Because we grow this manifold with level sets, so therefore, we could actually use this information. So I'm going again back to the Lorentz system, and as I close up by going back to my first slide, I use this 8 over 3 beta now, standard Lorentz, everything as you had expected it. And this picture is showing you the manifold, but with a very interesting coloring. Namely, every band, as I've computed them, I've colored them according to how far away I am in geodesic distance from the origin, the equilibrium point. Yeah, so my stable manifolds tend to be blue and unstable manifolds red here. Forget about all that. Now we talk distance. Blue is close, and the greener I get, yellow, red, I get further and further away. Now, this entire manifold has an arc length of just over 150. And so that's how we scaled the distances. So you see two viewpoints. And the coloring can give you an idea of the complexity of this geometry of this manifold. Now another idea we had was, well, why don't we just skip every other band, you get a see-through effect. You see, it's like this manifold is more complicated than that one because you can sort of see through it. Now I want to put up another one where we're now going to combine the geodesic distance with the Euclidean distance. This picture shows you several cuts of the entire manifold with a sphere, is a Euclidean radius that is increasing as you go down. So here is a relatively small sphere, and here the radius of the sphere grows bigger. The colors are still there to give you the geodesic distance. And, one thing I guess I want to point out for those of you who are interested in what the stable manifold of the Lorentz system looks like is the creation of this helical shape. That is not about the z-axis. There is a symmetrical image on the other side. And again, gosh, you want to look through this thing. So here again, you see a rendering of this exact same picture, but with every other ribbon just left out, so you can see through it. And there you see it. There's a helical one there. There's a helical one there. I don't know how well you can see it. Those are red. The blue one, that's the helical shape around the z-axis. So in sort of studying this manifold, we found that you need to have the helical behavior of the geometry of this manifold about the z-axis, we understand. But in order to get it, you need to create extra helical shapes. And we actually think there's an infinite number of them close to it. Symmetrical, because the system is symmetrical. They need to be created in order to keep your geodesic level set to be topological circles, I guess. And in this case, they always are. So thank you very much for your